You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Orr and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to the Family Feud podcast. I'm Keely Orr here alongside Shotgun Spratling for another episode. Shotgun, how are you doing?
Game week. It's game week, folks.
We didn't plan that, but yes, it's game week. I'm excited. You're excited. College football's back. I'm very excited.
Finally. Jeez, I'm tired of all this fall camp crap. Let's get to the games.
Yeah, it made me realize, like, oh, there's payoff for going to 90 million fall camp practices and standing in really gross heat. Games.
More gross heat.
Ah, but it's worth it. It's exciting gross heat.
True. Ready for the games. Let's go.
Yes. Before we get into it, as always, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, where you can find podcasts, Audio Boom, and that sort of thing. You can also email us at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. Shout out to everyone who has emailed us. We appreciate you guys. As always, Shotgun, you look like you are going to say something.
No, I was just thankful that people emailed us once again, besides the Nigerian princesses that wanted to give us money.
It's really intense. Like, I've never had an account that gets so much spam.
We're quite spammable, apparently.
I guess so.
But thanks for people that are sending their questions. Remember, you can send your questions for us or also your stock up, stock downs that you have.
Yeah, you can submit yourself into the segments we have. And some of you guys have done that, and it's pretty fun to see what you guys have to say. So you never know. You could be in a podcast episode.
Indeed.
Shall we get into it,
Chuck? Sure.
Stock up, who you got?
We'll start with Greg Johnson. Obviously, yep. You know, Greg Johnson not just working his way up the depth chart, but we found out yesterday Clancy Pendergast said that he will start on Saturday. He was listed as an or designated starter with Isaiah Langley. They were listed both of his first team with an or between them. However, you kind of expected Isaiah Langley being the senior to kind of get the starting nod. Not the case. Greg Johnson has surpassed him, and Clancy said it's because he's had a really good spring. You know, he was kind of limited in spring because he's coming back from the shoulder injury, and then he was cleared fully to go into fall camp. He had a really good fall camp. You know, asked him, as Clancy, as Ronnie Bradford, what's been the biggest difference for him? All three of them said technique. You know, he's really worked on his technique. Ronnie Bradford also said he has good body balance.
Just like that?
Yeah, he really enunciated that. He was really into that one. So I was going to have that heard in on silence, but we're going to keep it in stock up because Greg Johnson, you know, he really surpassed our expectations, I think, coming into the season, because kind of expected, you know, Iman Marshall looked like in the spring he locked down that one side, but it looked like Isaiah Langley kind of taking that next step, and no, Greg Johnson is working his way up. He'll get the start. You'll see both of them play, and the question is going to be who can be more consistent. I think that's what they're looking for there is consistency, not making one play and then missing the next, but who can make third down stops was one of the things Ronnie Bradford said. Who can, not just interceptions, not just production in that regard, but tackling, being a willing tackler, which Clancy said was one of the things that Greg Johnson has stood out at, and then making those third down stops and getting the defense off the field, and also, you know, keeping plays from becoming big plays. And if you have to make a tackle in the flats and it's a first down, make that tackle. Don't let it become a bigger play.
Yeah, for me, hearing Clancy talk about why he made his decisions on the depth chart, it really made me think, okay, this is Greg Johnson's spot. I feel like it's more so his inexperience that didn't outright win him the spot. Especially when you mentioned it earlier, he says he's a willing tackler. I think that's really his advantage as far as his power and his willingness to tackle, which is Dan loved that phrase, and it's a good phrase. But yes, Greg Johnson.
Yeah, Greg Johnson likes contact. He was a running back in high school at Hawkins High. He played some safety, some cornerback. Ryan Bradford actually pointed out, he's like, he didn't, you know, they didn't play him too much on defense. You know, he was more of an offensive weapon for Hawkins. So, you know, sometimes they reserved him on defense and didn't use him as much. He said, you know, that's part of the thing. One of the reasons why his technique has kind of grown so much is because he didn't play a ton of defense in high school because he was so important to that team on offense. So, but now, you know, he's been fully committed to the cornerback position, and he's really taking some strides, and it looks like he'll start on Saturday.
I have an obvious choice for stock up. Something that developed in between our podcasts. JT Daniels is the starting quarterback for USC.
Haven't heard of him.
Who's that?
Yeah, who's that guy? Yeah, JT wins the starting job, and obviously big news on Sunday. This is the second time that USC has had a quarterback decision, and I've kind of been thrown like, hey, can you write something real quick? Because Chris Trevino was up in Yosemite. You know, hiking Half Dome, went on a nearly 24-hour hike for him. So he was out of pocket for that. He actually had something prepared in case JT Daniels was going to be named the quarterback, because we expected that. But unfortunately, we couldn't get it because he was off the grid, basically. So I was on the way back from Santa Monica and wrote something in like 17 minutes. I was really proud of myself.
It was impressive. Yeah, I felt like the call coordinator because I was calling Chris. I was calling you. I was like, what's happening? Nothing's up. And so it was an interesting charades that we played.
And a little like the last time that USC made a decision, the Max Brown, Ryan found out earlier than we expected. So he's like, hey, can you write something real quick? Because he was out somewhere when he found out. I was at a museum exhibit and had brought my computer just in case. And I was like, okay, I'm going to sit over here. The people I was with at the museum, I was like, I'm just going to sit on this bench and enjoy this this art over here for 20 or 30 minutes real quick.
That's the funny thing, if we're going to peek behind the curtain, is like Joey Kaufman asked Helton on Thursday, like, hey, do you have an estimate of when you're going to make the decision? And Helton was like, no, not really. And Joey kind of said, well, I'm trying to plan my Sunday too. You know, it's like, we also, I mean, I was anxious the whole time. I was with my friends and they were just like, are you okay? And I was like, it doesn't matter to me. It was just like, I know that eventually at some point I'm going to have to be on and I don't know when. And so I brought my backpack everywhere I went. And they're like, what are you doing?
And the depth chart was going to come out. Yep. And for us, for me, it was the last weekend basically that you have freedom. For,
yes, exactly.
Until December. So, I mean, I have some stretch. I think I have 3 days off or 4 days off from the beginning of August until the end of November. One of those is Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you're a workaholic. It's been established.
One of those is Thanksgiving, so I'll get that day off. But, you know, so I was trying to take advantage. I had to work in the mornings both of those days, but I went Saturday night, went to see the Philharmonic at the Hollywood Bowl. You know, I was like, oh, it's going to be a great weekend. And I was like, wait, Chris has already wrote something for that, right? Right. Okay, I'll write something.
Yeah, you. When I called you, you were like, okay. But moving back to football versus us complaining about our jobs that we love.
I'm not complaining about it.
We're not complaining, but some may interpret it that way. It's not that way. It's just part of the job.
Some guy named JT Daniels. He won the job. You know, one of the biggest things that that Brian Ellis said this week was the decision making was part of the reason. You know, he makes those quick decisions. He's ready to go. Now, we'll see how it goes. And I'm curious to see the leash. I assume that, you know, they're not going to be quick to pull him or anything. But if he throws 3 interceptions in one game and 3 interceptions in the next game, it's all of a sudden he goes from savior to sitting on the bench. We'll see. I don't think that's going to happen because I think he's, you know, much more advanced than that. But, you know, we'll see what the leash is there and how they kind of use him, how they morph the play calls and stuff to benefit him and fit his style. We'll see all that on Saturday.
I was a little curious in the very beginning because if you read the verbiage of what Helton wrote, he said, JT Daniels will be our starter for the UNLV game. He didn't say for the season. And so that may, I might be reading into it a little bit. I asked around a little bit and there was a sense that it's a permanent JT Daniels, but I do wonder the leash, if it goes somehow, God forbid, horribly for JT Daniels, how is it a quick pull? I don't know.
And Max Brown was the starter for what, 3 games? So
yeah, ish.
No, so we'll see. I mean, all depends.
We're going down the wrong road
the coaches,
right now.
The coaches always say that it's week-to-week decision. Every depth chart is week-to-week based on how you practice, how you play, all that type of stuff. So we'll see. I thought really interesting that Brian Ellis said that they basically have a plan for everything in this game.
I thought that was interesting.
So he said there's a plan for him rolling, being JT Daniels. There's a plan for us sputtering. There's a plan for things not going well. There's a plan for things going really well. Everything's planned out. Everything will have it scripted, and hopefully it goes well. But if not, we're going to be ready. So they have a plan. Like, so if JT gets rolling, they've got a plan for that. They'll call certain plays. But if not, they have a plan to, I would think, run the ball against UNLV because that run defense, not great.
Well, that's my question is, how much do you show what JT Daniels can do? If I'm the coaches, I want to keep it as vanilla as possible. It's kind of like when you bring up a guy from the minors. Guys, they tend to have more success because people don't have a lot of tape on them. Why put a lot of tape out there what JT can do?
I think that you don't want to put too much tape of well, it's not just what he can do. You want to see what he can do in a game situation. So you have to see if he can make certain throws for your own benefit to where you can call those in the Stanford game or the Texas game. Yeah. So you might have some – you don't call all the plays that you have, obviously. You might save some stuff, but you might want to see a certain throw here or there to determine whether you think he can make that in a game situation. Now, do you trust just what you've seen in practice and say, okay, well, we can save that corner route – because he can get there before the safety or whatever it may be in that regard. But I think that you have to see those in a game situation first. So I think they'll put some things out there. So I think more than just, we'll throw some bubble screens and some little short stuff, because that'll get him, you know, in the flow of being a college quarterback. I think you have to test him a little bit to see where you're at as you go into that next portion of the schedule that's really tough.
I think you have to thread the needle to where you work up his confidence, you let him get used to the pace, but you don't show too much. And how you thread that needle, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, and I asked Brian Ellis, I said, would you guys need to limit him? You know, will you limit the playbook or anything for him? He said, yeah, I don't think we're going to have to do that. So, like I said, he said that they will change things if necessary, but he said that there are some things that they won't do, but he said that as far as limiting stuff, I think that he said as far as you just kind of feel the game as it goes, and he said didn't think that he would have to do that.
Interesting. Who else you got for stock up?
Stock up. I got Porter Gustin.
Yep, that's a good one.
Porter Gustin back on the field the last 2 days, full participant. Well, not a full participant, like 90% participant,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Not, they didn't, you know, he wasn't on the first string defense for every team period or anything like that, but he's going full bore. He was doing one on ones, everything else. And he came back from Tuesday's practice and practiced again on Wednesday. I thought that was a huge step, because that was something that last year they threw him in for the games, and then his knee didn't respond, or not his knee, his foot didn't respond to it. Now you saw that his knee this year, the meniscus, okay, how is he going to respond after a full day of activity? Oh, he looks fine. That's when you know, okay, he's healthy, he's ready to go. I think he'll play on Saturday. For sure he'll start on Saturday. The question is, how much do you play him? How much do you need to play him? You know, do you put him on the proverbial pitch count? Do you do that? We'll see. And if they do that, do they stick to it, unlike last year at ASU?
I feel like this is one of your biggest pet peeves.
Oh, I can't stand it. It's like if you say Clayton Kershaw is coming off his back injury, we're going to throw him 60 pitches, and then all of a sudden he throws 118. Like, why are you giving him a full workload when he just came off the DL? Like, that's not what you do.
It's illogical, for sure. I mean, Clancy Pendergast joked how they're going to have to assign a equipment manager to hide Porter Gustin's helmet just to make sure he doesn't get in there. If that's what it takes, then do it.
Or what you could do is just score a lot of points early and then you don't need him anyways.
That too. Yeah, but definitely a good sign. It seems like from what Porter Gustin's has said that he's learned from last year, that he won't try and push it. He said he could have come back last week, but he didn't want to push it. He still went slower and tried to do movements with Ivan Lewis, and that's what we saw last week on the field. So positive news for Porter Gustin.
That also flows into my last stock up is health. Yesterday they had 11 guys out, but they did get Marquis Stepp and Jacob Lichtenstein returning. But that's the least amount of guys they've had out since August 8th, which is like the fourth or fifth practice, which is what you want leading up to the first game. You didn't let any of those injuries linger. You know, they've had 34% of the roster has missed a practice or been limited. That includes walk-ons, everything. 34% of the roster has missed at least one practice, or at least portions of the practice, not been able to finish the practice. So that's a huge number. To have only 11 guys, and you have one very big concern in the middle of your offensive line, which is going to be talked about a little bit later.
Yes.
But besides that, I think you feel really comfortable with where the health is going into this game, which is good news.
That will actually resurface in our agree-disagree portion. And I think we might get a little heated in that regard. My final stock up is Isaiah Polamau, actually. Surprisingly, based off of what Clancy Pendergast talked about in his presser yesterday, he said that Isaiah was pretty impressive battling for that safety position. But Isaiah's also doubling up, and he's backing up the corner position. Because he was only mentioning, someone asked him why Bubba, and then he started talking about Isaiah. And then he was like, Isaiah will also be doubling up at the corner position. And I was like, Isaiah is a corner. And then I was like, oh, pull him out. But it was just, it was a lot of Isaiah talk. But I think it's interesting that that's happening. And he said that Isaiah has made huge strides this fall camp. He will see the field a lot, which for Clancy to say that, as he likes his guys and he trusts them, and you have to kind of work your way to break in through that trust circle, I think that's a pretty positive sign for Isaiah to pull him out.
I think it's also saying something about Bubba Bolden. You know, Bubba Bolden obviously has taken all the first team reps last week when we talked to Clancy, and Clancy said, you know, he's still in the mix. You know, he's leading right now. We'll see. He wasn't ready to just give him the job. And then also yesterday, wasn't ready to fully give him the job.
I was surprised by it when someone asked him, well, what did Bubba do to win the job? He stumbled a little bit on his answer. And it wasn't this glowing praise of Bubba Holden. Obviously, he said that Bubba had good communication and chemistry with Marvell and Fall Camp. But it wasn't like, he's our guy, as much as we saw with Greg Johnson, as he gave him a vote of confidence.
Yeah, so I think that Bubba still has some stuff to do to kind of lock up that spot. And I think you'll see some rotation there. It's maybe similar to what they did with Marvell Tell and Chris Hawkins when they were opposite of Leon McQuay a few years ago, where they rotated those guys in on different series. So I think we'll see both of those guys. And what you do in the game obviously matters more than what you do in practice. So when the lights are on, when the refs are out there throwing flags and everything else, what do you do? How do you perform? So we'll see what those guys do in the game. And then I think that will determine who gets more playing time the next couple games too.
Speaking of which, I'm going to make a quick question time. Is there any concern there for...
Question time?
Is there any concern there for... You have an inexperienced corner. You have inexperienced safety on that side. Is there any concern there with that might cause hiccups going forward?
Yeah, it could, but I think that's just the way things play out. You know, if you lose more guys on defense in a year, then you're going to have, you know, there's obviously going to be certain areas where teams can attack. Now, maybe that's the thing is teams to try to attack that. UNLV tries to attack that side, and you find out a lot about those guys. And if you need to, you can flip the safeties. You can do some different things if you need to change up your defense in order to kind of protect those guys a little bit.
Yeah, but like you said, I don't think there's anything they can necessarily do about it because they're stuck with who they have at this point.
Well, you can do different things as far as flipping the safeties if you really wanted to, but I think that they're confident enough in those guys to be able to play and, you know, not have to move anything around early. But then they find out in that first game, you'll see whether or not they have to do that for the opponents they have coming up after UNLV.
All right, well, let's move to stock down. Who do you got on the stock of down?
Obviously, you start with Toa Lobendon. He's had the health issues. You know, we mentioned it without saying it, but, you know, definitely a concern there. You have a redshirt senior that should be able to control things at the line of scrimmage, should be able to help out your true freshman quarterback and, you know, make calls for you. Or do you?
Dun, dun, dun.
So he left practice on Tuesday. You know, he did a little bit of teamwork early in practice, but then was pulled. And then he didn't practice yesterday. He didn't practice last Thursday. You know, how big is that concern? You know, can they get him back? You know, he's got a pectoral injury, which is always tough as an offensive lineman because, you know, guys are trying to get by you. They're pulling on that.
Especially if you're snapping the ball.
Yeah, that too. So, you know, I think there's some question marks there. And obviously you want him back for the Stanford and Texas game coming up after it. So how much are you worried about getting that, you know, a redshirt freshman, Brett Nealon, would be the backup, getting him in there in the first game versus trying to save Toa a little bit, make sure he's healthy for that Stanford and Texas game.
This is an area where I'm very skeptical in the sense of how much Clay is really saying how bad it is. Just because I know I've said this pretty much on Instant and on Facebook Live. Sorry if you already heard this, but the fact that Clay Helton told us last Thursday after a closed practice that Toa Lobendon didn't practice and that, oh, right, he's had a pec injury since summer. What? Okay. Didn't know that. And then come Monday, he doesn't finish. Or come Tuesday, he doesn't finish. And then Wednesday, he doesn't practice at all. It felt like Clay was putting breadcrumbs on Thursday of, hey, this might be an issue. And I think it might be an issue more than Clay Helton is letting on, which is concerning.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Toa is a huge part of that offense line just because he's the veteran guy, he's the leader there. So what is your captain able to do when you come to the first game?
Captain, oh, captain.
Mm-hmm.
I also had Toa Lobendon. I had Akili Ross. I think this is the final appearance on this show for Akili Ross, which is unfortunate. He is transferring. He will be a graduate transfer in 2019. He's still sticking around for fall to finish his classes. And you brought up a good point earlier is that if you still have classes to go, why not play this season? We had a question on Twitter that said, could we give a little bit more background? It seems pretty abrupt that suddenly after that practice, he's gone.
Well, I mean, Akili Ross basically won the position coming out of spring camp. And then the second practice, he hurts his hamstring. So he's basically not done any pad work at all leading into last week. He's trying to get as many reps as he can. Clancy was talking about we want to get him reps, you know, get him in that mix with Bubba Bolden and Isaiah Polamau to try to battle for that position. And then last Wednesday, you know, there's a little bit of confusion in a drill. He goes and takes a rep when the quarterback's not throwing the ball, so he tries to step back in, and it becomes an argument, basically, because he won't get out of the drill, and Isaiah Pulumau's not going to give up the rep. You know, the guy's battling what you want to see, competition over reps, because you know how important those are. But then the coaches tell Akili Ross to get out of the drill, and he still is not moving, so then he gets an argument with Tyler Vaughns. They have to be separated. Akili Ross tries to calm down. He walks away from the situation. He takes like a long lap around the field. Even before that, Iman Marshall tried to get him to come back, and he basically cursed out Iman Marshall. You know, Clay Helton tried to get him to come over, and he just continued to walk around. He cooled down, but then he didn't get back in the drills, and then we find out the next day he's going to take the weekend for some personal issues, to basically contemplate what he wants to do. And then we found out this week that he will no longer be with the team.
I heard that it's more than just Wednesday. I heard that it was a tough camp for him, and there's personal issues besides just what happened on Wednesday. Granted, I don't know the full story, but I don't think it was just, hey, there's a blow up on Wednesday, I'm leaving the team. So to answer a Twitter question, I think it's more than that.
Yeah, and you know, he's a guy that initially said, hey, when he committed, I plan to be there for 3 years. So his plan going in was he was going to come in, he's going to be able to start, he's going to be able to play immediately, going to be able to start probably by year two, year three, and be able to show his ability and be gone for the NFL. That was the whole idea of that comment. And instead, he had to take a red shirt. He's dealt with some injuries. He's moved around positions. They haven't really settled him in one spot. He played some nickel last year, and he played some safety. You know, they liked him at safety this year, and Clancy talked about how he liked his versatility, where they could use him in that nickel. So then you can put that safety down the box more if you need to, and if they spread somebody out, you can take him out there with him. He can do some different things there. But then I think just there's frustration there from not being able to get on the field. I mean, last year he felt like he knew the playbook and stuff, and USC, just he was behind guys. He was behind Chris Hawkins, behind Marvell Tell. He wasn't going to beat either one of those guys out. And then the nickel spot, nobody was beating out a Jenna. But when they went dime, he was the guy they used. He used him in some different things, but it was just teams that went with those, you know, four and five wide packages, so he wasn't getting much time. It felt like he probably should have been getting more time. He probably did. So, you know, he probably frustrated from that. And then he has this opportunity. He's with the first team. And then frustration boils up more and more when you see that you're losing these reps and not being able to get on the field. And I guess, you know, it all culminated, with that practice. But obviously there's been more behind the scenes and stuff. And he decided that he does not want to be the program anymore.
Yep. Who else do you got on Stuck Down?
I got the scout team because we're not seeing those guys as much.
That's a creative usage. Nice.
So they're doing some scout team work before we even get into practice as the media, because we're not allowed to go in until they stretch. So some of the things that they were doing previously were just running plays. They're now running scout team. They're running scout team. It's just less. And then previously you would see the scout team basically until the end of practice, maybe one period until the end of practice. Now you're still having those competition periods at the end of practice, which I think is really good to see. And are still getting that scout team work. Now we'll see next week, I think, where they really are, because you can prepare for UNLV, but you also kind of know with the first game, you don't know exactly what they're going to run. So you just run some of the stuff they've run before. You can't be prepared for everything because they'll have new stuff. Next week, we'll find out when they're actually preparing for Stanford, if they do more scout team work or exactly what it is, but less scout team work this week. So Stock Down for the scout team.
I had a Stock Down for USC's receiving tight ends. Josh Follow, he's been having that hamstring. I had noted earlier last week that during some, I think, special teams periods or periods where he's not actively involved, a trainer would stretch his hamstring for a while and try and get that sorted out. But it was never something that kept him out of practice. And then I think it finally ended up bugging up on him this week. So that's unfortunate for Josh Follow. Also, the long forgotten Daniel Amaterbebe. Because I want to be annoying, I will bring up that both you and Ryan thought that Daniel Amaterbebe would start the first game of the season. And I was very skeptical, and I would like to toot my horn about that.
Are you saying he's not going to play? Because we don't know that for sure. He hasn't been ruled out.
I will not believe it until I see it.
The thing is, Daniel Amaterbebe played last year, but he still was not fully healthy. So he played a lot of snaps toward the end of the year, but you know, he wasn't the same explosive player, and I think that's part of the thing. They're trying to get him to be back to where he was 2 years ago. But that tight end position, I mean, the tight end position as a whole, the tight end group, All five of those guys have missed time now.
Yep.
Tyler Petit had a back injury that kept him out 3 days. Follow now. This is his second day in a row with a hamstring, or yesterday was. Eric Cromanhook had a hamstring issue. He was out for 10 competitive practices, so that's even a longer period than that. Daniel Moribabe obviously has been limited or out every practice so far this season. And then Austin Appleby, who they really like as a walk-on, a guy that could potentially get in there to be a blocker and stuff, he's missed the last 9 competitive practices with mono. So, that group has missed 40 practices already, competitive practices. That's not including walkthroughs. That's not including the Thursdays that we're not allowed to be there. So the one practices we see, they've already missed 40. So you got to be concerned about that group just being healthy. Now, right now, Eric Cromanhook and Tyler Petit are healthy. That should be plenty enough for a UNLV game, but you want to get, that's one of the strengths of that group is how diverse they are, and they're even listed on the depth chart now in 2 different positions, tight end and the F spot for a flex tight end. So you want to get those guys healthy and, be able to use them in different ways, which is what is the strength of that group. But right now, some concerns.
Yep, indeed. Do you got anyone else for stock down?
I got Coliseum confusion.
Ooh.
Now, cool. I know USC is trying really hard to basically post what they, where you should park, where you should do this, but I know there's going to be a lot of confusion for this game, so we want to give another shout out to everyone. Make sure if you're going to the game on Saturday, get there early, get there at least an hour before you were planning to go. Wake up, come to tailgate and get you some mimosas or whatever in the morning and get ready to go rather than sitting at home getting that extra hour of sleep, whatever it is. Just because there's going to be a ton of traffic around the Coliseum. If you do not have a specific parking pass for the Coliseum, you cannot park there. And you have to park on campus. And Keely said there's only certain lots that are pay lots. So make sure you look at the map that she tweeted out yesterday or today.
No, it was definitely like 2 weeks ago.
She's going to retweet that today.
Yes. Sir, boss.
She's going to retweet that today to help you guys out. But make sure you get there early. There's going to be a lot of confusion and stuff with this first game. Your tickets tell you what gate to go in, so know that. It's just a lot of things are going on with this construction. So that's stock down because I know it's going to be a big headache for a lot of people.
Technically, would the confusion about the Coliseum be up? Stock up?
True. A lot of confusion.
Yes. That's it for stock down, correct?
That's it for me.
Heard it on the sidelines. What'd you hear?
So Brian Ellis explaining why Matt Fink actually is number 2 on the depth chart rather than Jack Sears. Now, Jack Sears, we all thought, was the guy that was mainly competing with JT Daniels.
Yeah.
But he ends up 3rd on the depth chart. A little confusing. A lot of people, that was something that caught people's eye. And asked Brian Ellis, what it was about it. And he said Matt was a little further along in the offense. So it sounds like Jack Sears still having a little concerns with the playbook is what is the issue there. So right now, Matt Fink is listed as the backup to JT Daniels if anything happens to him or if they need to switch quarterbacks for whatever. We'll see who they put in. Hopefully they're blowing out UNLV. I think that's what's going to happen. So I think you'll see a second quarterback. And if they do, who goes in? But also, if there was an injury, yeah, I think Jack Sears would be the guy that would be leading this team the next week.
Interesting. Yeah, I would think so. I'm surprised about the whole playbook issue with Jack Sears. That's not something that I saw.
But, the way that Brian Ellis kind of worded it is like, you guys don't see everything. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, basically. And he said that, Matt's, knowledge of the playbook, that type of thing, his control of the offense, that he would be able to trying to think of the word he used. He'd basically be able to run the offense a little bit better. So I think that's why he's there right now.
Interesting. I only have one hurt on the sideline.
Managing the offense. That's what he said.
There you
see. He'd be able to manage it. Like an Alabama quarterback, not named Tua Tagovailoa.
My hurt on the sideline is just a little fun tidbit. I already tweeted about it, but during DB drills, Clancy Pendergrass was standing over there and Elijah Griffin, they were doing... They would back up and then try and catch a ball. And I think Elijah took his eyes off the ball and he muffed it. He didn't catch it. And Clancy just goes, eyes on the ball, regulate. So it was just funny. It was funny.
Elijah Griffin, obviously the son of Warren G, who's most famously known for Regulators, who Keely did not know the initial sound piece in that song comes from Young Guns, which is actually Charlie Sheen is in that song, if you did not know.
Did we have a conversation about this?
We did. You've already forgotten. She doesn't listen to anything I say.
Oh. False, but okay.
Also heard on the sidelines, I briefly talked with Liam Douglas on Tuesday. He said he's nearly 300 pounds now, which is crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy because His parents did not let him play football until his junior year of high school. He was 217 pounds then.
Wow.
So he's put on over 80 pounds, basically, in the last 2 years.
Crazy.
That is ridiculous. You know, a very athletic guy. You know, he's a guy that obviously is going to be set up for a red shirt this year. He's on the scout team. He said he's really excited about, you know, the fact that he gets to go against one of the top defenses in the country, you know, week in and week out to help him get better because he's only played for 2 years. So I think he's a guy that 2 or 3 years down the road could be a guy that could be a stalwart left or right tackle. Very athletic guy that can move his feet. Now he's added the weight. Kind of got to get used to that, but he's a guy that I just thought it was very interesting. Both of us have saw him several times last year at Harvard Westlake. So I just stopped and chatted with him now that we could talk to the freshman for just a quick second. But he's up to 300 pounds nearly. So that was crazy for me.
That is crazy.
I also, Anka Cedric Ware coming out of the tunnel yesterday. Game week. So he's hyped up. Senior year, he's ready to go. I just thought that, you know, it was fun little piece of how excited the guys are to really finally get out and get on the field. Like us, they're tired of this fall camp crap, too.
I wouldn't necessarily call it fall camp crap, but sure.
Well, when you're the starter, it is.
Was that what?
Like I said, to where he's going to be the starter.
Oh, so. I thought that was a dig at me, and then I was like, I didn't get that. And then.
Yeah, you're the backup. It's okay.
No. Okay. Agree, disagree. You ready for this?
All right, I'm ready.
USC is more injured than Clay Helton is letting on.
Just with the Toa Lobanon thing, that's. I think you're starting the conspiracy theory there. Besides that, I don't think.
Okay, but
who else?
Austin Jackson, his ankle sprain looks to be a little bit more. He got it retaped.
He's practiced.
He got it retaped. Maybe he's a little gimpy. Clayton Bradley
every,
wasn't 100% yesterday.
Austin Jackson's practiced every competitive practice the last 2 weeks, so.
I'm just saying.
He had a lot of tape on his ankle. Oh.
Josh Follow. Just saying. Okay, maybe it's just less. Keely conspiracy time.
I think it's less because you have guys that have been out for forever. Oluwole Betiku, Solomon Tuliapupu, Daniel Amorebebe, the all-name team, obviously. Apparently, if you have a really good name, you're in trouble as far as injuries. But you have guys like, you know, Austin Appleby with mono and stuff, but there's only been a couple of guys that are kind of that are new injuries and stuff to follow. You know, Jordan Austin had a pectoral strain as well on Tuesday, but he was back on Wednesday. Liam Jimmins with a turf toe. That was kind of interesting because he practiced all last week.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had turf toe and missed some practices the week before. He's out. He's already been ruled out for the game. And then also the one that was actually the most confusing to me was Palaiye Niatiote. Yep. So he had meniscus surgery 2 weeks ago, I believe now. Or on Monday, it was 2 weeks ago. So 2.5 weeks ago, he's been wearing a sleeve on his knee and stuff. But he came out in a boot on his ankle or on his foot. So
on his left foot. Isn't that weird?
I don't know if he did something else or that's the next step in his recovery because you never saw poor Augustine with a boot after his meniscus surgery.
That's a Thursday Clay Helton question for sure. Yeah, I guess so. I guess maybe I'm reading into it a little bit more. I just felt like by the end of Wednesday, it seemed a little bit banged up.
Two new injuries this week. That's it. Toa and Josh Follow. And you got multiple guys back too. So,
yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Next.
The Trojans offensive line will be the key to this season's success.
Yes, definitely. Agree with that. You know, they got to protect a young quarterback and create some running lanes for those three running backs.
Amon-Ra St. Brown will finish second in receiving yards by the end of the season.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say yes. And I'm just going to go with history here because of Michael Pittman's injury history.
Yeah, that's what
I'm a little concerned about that. Now, he's had some hand issues as far as like he's broken a bone in his thumb, I think it was. You know, just he's been banged
shoulder,
up.
Shoulder sprain.
Yeah, so hopefully this doesn't happen. We always want everyone to be as healthy as possible throughout the entirety of a season and let the competition play out. But I'm just going to go with that. So I'm going to say he does finish second.
Interesting. So you're leaning more on the side of because of an injury versus just gets targeted more.
I mean, your top three targets are going to be those two guys and Tyler Vaughns. I don't think any of the other receivers are going to be close to being. I think it's going to be a big separation. Like the closest next guy might have 200 yards at max.
Really?
And those guys will be up above 500 each.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's my prediction.
Okay. This season will be more fun than if Sam Darnold returned. From a covering perspective, from a development perspective,
No, because Sam Darnold returns. I think he got college football playoff aspirations and could happen. With JT, like I've continued to say, I think they go 3-2 in the first five games. We'll see. I've already said I'll jump on the national championship contender bandwagon if they're 5-0. But I think they start at 3-2, so that puts you out of the playoff hunt. Whereas with Sam Darnold, I think they're at least 4-1, still in it.
Interesting. What if JT gets USC to 4-1? Where do you stand on the bandwagon?
I'm not going to that till we get to it.
Okay.
I'm on the 5-0. I'm on the 3-2. I'm not going to the 4-1 yet.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to disagree with you, and I think this season is more fun than if Sam Darnold returned. I think the personalities are more interesting. I think it's more interesting to see, just from a development perspective, what is JT going to do? Amon-Ra St. Brown is interesting.
There's a lot of development things that are interesting. However, there's no Chris Hawkins, so it can't be more fun.
That's true. Shout out to Chris Hawkins. last one. It's kind of like a question / topic of discussion. Is there a fallacy with USC fans thinking that they want USC to blow out UNLV, but they also want rotation of younger players? Are you going to get both?
Well, if you blow them out, then you get all the backups in that regard. Do you want rotations early? Is that what you're saying?
I guess so, yeah.
And then if you have rotations early, then someone makes a mistake and you're worried. Yeah, see.
Or you put them in and then suddenly by the end of the game, the score is a little bit closer. You know?
I just think they're going to beat up on UNLV anyways.
Yeah. I know.
I just do not think UNLV is very good. Now, I could be completely wrong. I could think that Coach Sanchez did a really good job building the Gorman program into what it was. And you've seen that even after, you know, his brother took over, that it hasn't been quite the same as it was when he was the head coach. So I think that shows a little bit about him as well. And I think he'll build up that UNLV program, but I just don't think they have the playmakers that can give USC a big challenge.
What percentage of run versus pass do you think we'll see?
68% run versus 32%
pass. Very specific.
I don't know. 64. 64 actually sounds pretty legit. 64% to 36 run pass USC.
That makes sense. Yeah. I could go with that. I think the first drive is going to just be handoff. One throw.
I'd go play action first play.
Okay.
New quarterback. Let's see what you got.
I want just a bomb to Amon-Ra St. Brown, but that's never going to happen on the first play.
It doesn't have to be to mine, but I just want Clay Helton. Hey, Bubba, we're just going to air it out the first play. That turned into a little bit of an Ed Orgeron. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just curious. Which kind of leads us into our question segment with predictions. Also, shout out to everyone who emailed us. Thanks to David Stanton for your nice email. He didn't ask a question. We got an email from Jackson in Virginia, who gave us some peppered us with some questions, predictions for the season and the game. He also put his answer so we can discuss what we think as well. He says, which USC player scores the first touchdown? Which we've talked about at length.
This has been a discussion. I actually went out of the box and said Iman Marshall with a pick six. If I stay in the box, I'm saying Stephen Carr finishes off a drive.
Interesting. I think Sed's going to finish off of a drive. He thinks Vi will punch it in.
All those are quite possible. You could even see, I mean, Ryan Abraham picked Tyler Petit, which is a strange pick, I think, just because of how little they've thrown the tight ends in the past. But you could also see Tyler Vaughns, obviously, go up and catch a ball. Michael Pittman, Amon-Ra even. Avelis Jones could take a kickoff back, you know, if he doesn't get tripped up by the kicker. Which kicker's got him last year? Avelis Jones got tackled by the kicker multiple times, which should never happen. So if the kickers don't get him, Avelis Jones, you know, who knows, takes it back to the house or, you know, on a jet sweep or something in the slot because he's a speedy guy and get behind the defense. I know some people have been throwing his name out there. That's
I know. I'm actually very curious about this. So if you want to tweet me your predictions, I just want to see what you guys think. I think it's interesting.
Marlon Tuipulotu.
Oh, Brandon Peely. Big man touchdown.
That would be the best first touchdown.
That would be the best. We have a question about which running back scores the first rushing touchdown,
I said Stephen Carr. You know, you might finish off a drive. You might also take 152 yards.
Which player scores the first receiving touchdown? He says Michael Pittman.
Tyler Vaughns,
I believe. Which USC player has the first sack? He thinks Jay Tufele.
No, I don't think it's Jay Tufele because I think they'll get a sack on the first two drives, which I think will still be the veterans in at that time. I'm going to go with Porter Gustin.
I was thinking that too. Welcome back to the Coliseum, Port Augusta.
I mean, how good was he that first half against Texas? I think he had 2 sacks in that, so I think, you know, he has a possibility of being the guy to get one. If you want to go a little out the box, I would go Kanaya Monga.
Oh, maybe Christian Rector?
Could be. Maybe. A lot of those guys could. And it just depends on what the other defensive linemen do to help collapse the pocket. It's oftentimes more than just what you do.
Also a testament to the talent on the defensive line that we're throwing so many names out there.
A lot of guys.
Is there an interception and who nabs it?
Iman Marshall, pick 6.
I think Ajayne. Ajayne has had the hot hands in fall camp, so.
Sure.
I don't know. Over under 40 rushes total for the running backs.
I would have to look back at the stats on this. I think they're all three of the guys are going to get 8 to 15 touches somewhere in there, so it's going to be close. I don't know how that fits with my 64% rushing.
So much math.
Yeah, a lot of math going on here. You know, if they run 80 plays versus if they run 60 plays, I'm going to go with 38.
So you're taking the under?
Taking the under.
I'm going to take the over just for fun.
Somebody chart this for us.
Yeah, Jackson, you can pay attention to us and give us an email. He says over, he hopes. And then finally, agree, disagree, USC will score at least 40 points against UNLV.
Agree, because I got him at 42. My prediction was 42-14. Sticking to it. And I'm terrible with predictions, so that might not be good news for USC.
We also have a late question text sent in from RA, which sounds like Ryan Abraham. Does USC keep its home winning streak going all season?
All season, yes.
I think we discussed this last pod, yeah?
I'm not sure. But yes, because I don't see anybody on that schedule that really scares you at all at home. It's actually a bad slate as far as for fans and stuff, which I guess kind of fits in with it being a crappy construction year.
Yeah.
But all your best games are on the road. Yeah, at Stanford, at Texas, at Utah. Those are basically going to determine how USC's season plays out. The one you got to be concerned with is Notre Dame at the end of the season.
I was about to say maybe Notre Dame, but the weird thing is I feel like Notre Dame's powers get zapped once they get into the Coliseum. It's a weird, like, they're a different team in South Bend than they are at the Coliseum.
It's been a lot different the last 2 times. They even got good weather for them, rainy stuff, 2 years ago, and they got stomped.
Yeah.
That was at a Jenna Harris pick 6. I was right there for that one.
True, true, true.
Along with Adoree Jackson doing it all.
Oh, yeah, that was insane, that game. Wow.
Leaping over kickers, taking punt returns back.
Pose. I think he
took a...
When USC made a late Heisman run for Adoree, just crazy.
Well, he made his name that game.
But what I'm saying is they should have done more if you're going to hype up your man. What would you consider a successful outcome for USC's first game?
A blowout would be successful, obviously, but as long as you get the win and you stay healthy, that's the biggest thing. You get ready for the next weeks. That's the thing.
Stay healthy, win, give JT Daniels some confidence.
Win a little bit better than the Western Michigan. I know the score turned out to be fine, but that game, that was still a tie game, I think, in the fourth quarter.
There were factors in there, though.
Yeah, not tackling. That was the biggest factor.
And yeah, but you also...
Not tackling.
Okay, sure, yes.
And not tackling.
Okay.
They all missed tackles. Even Cam Smith, when he came in the second half, you know, he was suspended for the first half. He missed a couple tackles, too. That was the thing. Everyone missed tackles that game, and that's why Western Michigan was in it. They're big running backs. They didn't tackle them well. I think the difference is this year, I mean, your running back's a lot different. Western Michigan had that big dude that was, you know, breaking tackles. Lexington Thomas is UNLV's top running back. He's a 5'9", 170 guy. Their quarterback now, however, is a big dude. Got to tackle him. But the physicality in fall camp and the way they tackled, I think they'll be much better prepared for it.
You'd hope. I hope that somehow that physicality transfers over and they actually do tackle. That would be the goal. Final question. We're going broad now. Who will be USC's toughest opponent this season?
Broad or the Broad? Another good museum.
I want to go to the Broad. Haven't been yet.
What's the question?
I just told you.
Yeah, I got excited about making a joke.
Who is USC's toughest opponent this season?
Texas on the road.
Yeah.
Because of what they're, you know, Tom Herman. And there was talk last year that he basically was trying to save stuff for USC because he really wanted to beat USC in the Coliseum, being a Southern California guy. But I just think that, you know, that team remembers that game where they basically...
They gave it away
because Sam Darnold led them on a touchdown drive in, what, 30 seconds or whatever it was.
I think the jump pass.
Yeah, I think Stephen Mitchell said that he's like, well, as long as he has like 14 seconds, I think we're pretty confident.
I think Sam said that. He was like,
is that what it was?
Someone asked him, like, is 30 seconds like enough time? And he was like, I could have had a little less. I'm like, okay, Sam. Sounds good.
So you know, they felt like they had that game won. And, you know, if they don't give up the check down Hail Mary at the end of the first half, you know, there's that. USC wins on the field goal, the strip fumble, a lot of things where they went USC's way in that game. So Texas, I'm sure, you know, they got a very veteran two deep, a lot of juniors and seniors on their two deep. So it's a tough place to play going to Austin. You know, I think it's going to be a really fun environment for us to go cover a game at. And I think it's going to be really tough for USC to win on the road there.
Yeah, I think it will be a sign of growth, both from the coaching staff and the team, if they can go into a hostile environment on the road and actually do something.
Yeah.
Not get blown out, because that seems to be the pattern as far as big matchups.
Except for Washington when they won.
Yeah, but okay, but whatever. Before we go, announcements. One, if you are listening to this before Friday at 3 p.m., you can see us a meet and greet at USC. We will be there before the Jock Rally. You can meet us. You can mess with Shotgun about Stock Neutral, because Stock Neutral Nation is out there.
We almost went a whole podcast without you bringing up this.
Nope, got to mention it. Oh, I think someone, Jackson also said Team Stock Neutral, so shout out to Jackson in Virginia. He did in his email. I swear. I'll post the receipts. Also, final thing, you can email us at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. There's another announcement that I need to make that I can't. Oh, Sunday, Facebook Live. We will have Tunnel Vision, our show. We'll be recapping the game, talking about it, kind of a longer analysis of the game. So that'll be fun. Check that out. We got all this content. So much content.
Lots of content. So make sure you send us your questions, your stock up, stock down at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. Questions, comments, agree, disagree, all that stuff. Send it in and be like Jackson and you know, get on the show.
Jackson.
Yeah, thanks, Jackson.
And yeah, okay, so we have football this weekend. We're excited. Thanks for listening to our podcast.
Keely sounds excited. We're excited. We're just so excited.
I'm so excited. Okay, we'll see you next week.
I'm so excited. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, look, we even got an 80s song in, mixed into the mix. Good job. This is a successful podcast now. We can end it here.
Okay, sounds good. We'll see you next week.
Peace.